the teacher named her in Pursuit's favorite expression.
What a
dicky bird of a problem. It's been a while since you lived there, though, I would say. Wouldn't you say? But it's always there. But we lose track of how to get there. So that's what you meditate to do, to find out who's really at home. The reason you've forgotten so much of the time how to live in that place is because of a feeling of insecurity, of unlove, of being a real idiot and miserable, malicious, nasty little child. Many reasons. All of them, I'm sure you can identify, any of you who have watched children or have children or can remember being a child. You know how less than perfect you actually were. Do you agree? Do you think the children are perfect? Anybody here like to speak about the perfection of the child with mine? I'll even accept it. You do know that children feel hurt about something because they can't understand. Say, for example, they're 3 months old and they wake up in the middle of the night and they're hungry and they cry and you don't immediately come. Because just as you were getting out of bed to answer them, you tripped over your underwear, which you'd forgotten you left there, and hit your head on the edge of a chair, which your husband had left just in the corner of the room there because he wanted to protect the floorboard that had come loose and so you didn't step on it. You knocked yourself out. You don't get to the child. The child's crying and there's pain in. And then it may turn to rage, for example. Have you ever seen a child being in rage? And the rage loses touch. The rage is to try to make the painful go away. Right? The rage loses touch with the idea that there can be an ease. Instead, the rage starts to focus on the painful. Do you see that? You know, any time you're not following me, I would really appreciate it if you would tell me. It would be very helpful to me. And so then that becomes a mode. You know, there is a certain kind of energy high in rage, isn't there? Would you agree? Mm-hmm. That if you could just really get angry at somebody for a short period of time, you can kind of ride on that blissful feeling of being above it for a moment. Unfortunately, it doesn't usually last. You land, and then you're in. There's all those corpses that you have to look at. All that damage you've done. But just for that moment of the release into anger, it feels very good, doesn't it? It's burning strong and clear. There's a definite clarity, and you're not caught. It's a roar, and then. Hard to sustain. And then there's that sense of depression and then the guilt because, you know, friends who shiver when you walk in the room. Or yourself when you walk. So rage can develop as a pattern for protecting yourself against pain, or the rage can be turned inwardly. Like you can focus really on, I don't like that pain, and there must be something I can do right that will stop it from coming. You understand? But there is some kind of focus there. All beings experience pain. There is no being anywhere, anytime. This mistake happens when you start to think that the pain is something to do with you. That you and the pain are in some type of relationship. And there are things you have to do to handle the pain. There's a mistake that comes there. Rather than trying to understand what is pain, it becomes something personal. If I wear my hair this way, and I put my glasses this way, and I always walk with my shoulder like this, then God won't strike me dead. So I think, so you do that, and luckily enough, God doesn't strike you dead for 5 steps, which gives you a sense of faith, oh, this must be working. Then somebody interferes with it, like say they put a 20-pound weight on this shoulder, and you get really angry because this is your relationship with how you're going to handle pain has now been interfered with. You understand me? You sure you do? So you imagine like layers and layers. I'm exaggerating and I'm making it, you know, bigger than it is and all that stuff, but you imagine layers and layers of little moments of experiencing something that you couldn't understand, that was dissatisfactory, that caused big fear, and not having a way to cope with it, and then deciding that somehow it's your fault or it's their fault, or maybe you should just get out of here. Maybe you should just split off and go into your mind and get busy and run into the future. So all of those thousands and thousands and thousands of little moments that have occurred in your life since the time you were born at least have created a habitual sense of what's right or wrong and how you should operate in the world. And underneath that layer is that part of yourself that knows what home really is. And this is definitely a challenge. Because if you start to try to find that part that does not identify with the pain, that can examine pain, that does not identify with non-love, that can examine non-love, if you want to find that part that is capable of compassion, then you have to just sit there when all your usual little come up, don't you? And you have to watch them, understand they have a reason, whatever the itch may be. Got that? Just watch it, know it has a reason, and decide that you want to feel what is underneath that reason. Now this is very difficult if you have been subjected to some really difficult things to understand. Because there is a tendency to want to try to get it. And every time you try to get it, what you're doing is you're doing just another little exaggeration of this. What you have to do is let go of it. Try to let go of it. Best way to do that is to teach your mind to focus in a bigger way. To give yourself a bigger breath. So usually in meditation, I know I'm starting kind of at very basic levels, but this might be interesting for some of you, and for some of you, you have no idea about this. This is what you're doing. Many people think that if you're meditating, you're going to put another layer of a behavior that will, and you're not. What you're trying to teach yourself to do is bring the mind to rest at one point, and just watch all of the actions come up that you usually do to get away from pain. And just for a short period of time, just keep saying, and what is under that? And what is under that? And see whether you can find that part of yourself that has never left home. Because that's the part that's been abandoned. And the pains and the fears are much smaller, much more insignificant than you would ever believe. That part is the power, the glory, the kingdom of your real being. It's right there in your own being. It's nothing that you can't touch. The question is whether for you the fear of past experiences, the fear of desiring experiences other than that occurred, that which occurred, the fear of being unsatisfactory, the fear of not being able, the fear of being caught in despair, the fear of being a less than perfect being, is going to cause you to give up yourself. That's what the difficulty is. Whether you can be frightened by the demons you yourself have painted. But you painted them so long ago, and you're such a skillful artist that you've forgotten. You follow me? No? Oh, okay. So meditation does this really interesting thing. It says, okay, first of all, just focus the mind on some neutral point. Like, for example, the breath. It's actually very clever to use the breath, but we can get into that later. Because we're all breathing. Now, and just whenever possible, just hold the mind there and just try to just watch the breath. And when the mind wanders, just bring it back and try to just watch the breath. And when you feel something, try to just watch the breath. So that no matter what else arises, you're just going to sit still. Because otherwise you're going to be chasing after all the waves on the ocean on the surface, and you're never going to find the depth. Right? So as soon as you start to do that, the first demon arises. The first demon is, okay, been there, done that, seen the breath, in, out, ho-hum, what's new? Yeah, but what about, you know, did I, he, she, they, it, and then tomorrow I've got it, oh yeah, breathing in, breathing out, been there, not with me. Oh yeah, and why did they say that to me? I should have said, if I had said, oh yeah, I wonder where I put that key. It must be in the, maybe it's in the sock drawer. Right? That's the first demon. And that is the biggest demon. That demon will devour you whole. But it looks so ordinary, you don't even notice it encroaching. That's the first. So what you have to do is say, oh, thinking, back to the breath. Oh, thinking. Usually that demon is very subtle when it comes in. It usually does something like breathing in. You see, one of the things you do to see how well you're watching the breath, because those thoughts do come very subtly, is you count. In the in-breath, out-breath, you count one. You really watch the out-breath and then you count. One in the first out-breath, two in the second, three up to 10. And then you start at one again. And usually about five, you go in, out, one, in, out, two, in, out, three, in, out, four, in, out, five, in, gee, this isn't so hard. I'm doing this pretty And then you have to say, oh, thinking, and start at one again. So let's try that. Let's try that. Make yourself fairly comfortable. Don't try to sit up too straight. If that's the most comfortable posture for you, sit like that for a while. And we're just going to do 5 minutes where you just try to watch in, out, one, in, out. And when the mind wanders, just bring it back. Leave your eyes open. Put your hand about, you know, level to in between your nipples about, you know, and right in front of you. And just look at your finger. See the end of your finger there? Draw a little circle with the end of your finger. Now just see that circle in space there. Can you see that circle? Just let your eyes rest on that circle. Now pay attention to your ears. Just leave your eyes there. And just listen. Just listen. Listen to the sounds of people breathing around you, birds outside. Listen to the sounds that are around you. That's what you do with your eyes. You just fix them somewhere and then you just listen. Your hand, your left hand is supporting your right hand and your thumbs are touching. And then just on. You set your awareness back to the room. Then you've done some meditation, then you do a review. Here, pay attention now. Where did you notice the breath more, in the right nostril or the left, you ask yourself. Please try to recall that. Was it from both? Who is more clear to you, the in-breath or the out-breath? Was the breath in little jerks, or was it fairly smooth? And did it change from the first count to counting from 1 to 10 to the last? Were you able to hold the mind at the breath, or was there a lot of skittering away? Is it easier at the beginning or at the end? Did the breath change when there were sounds? Just let it go. Now, was that interesting? How many of you were able to do 10 breaths? Mm-hmm. Watch 10 breaths. Mm-hmm. How many of you were able to get to 5? How about 3? Now, isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? I bet you thought it was your mind. Like, who's in charge? Here we are, perfectly safe. Nobody's asking you to drive a car, or pay a bill, or answer the phone. And you can't even bring your own mind to rest, just for a period of time, just to see what it's like. Isn't that curious? Isn't that curious? Like, who's pulling the strings, eh? Isn't that curious? It's a big demon, isn't it? It's very subtle. Ha ha ha. Did you find that the thoughts started very, just kind of just subtly? Just. Can you remember how the thoughts started? Any of you? Tell me one.
Excellent. I did too.
You did that too? Oh, excellent. Who else? Yeah, I want to hear them. It's really nice to take this demon out and have a good look at it.
Well, the first time I got the very first breaths, I got to 9, and then I went, 9. And then after that, it got less and less. Couldn't even.
So you didn't one. Get. Yeah, well, you didn't. You, it
well,
was
five.
Mind
well
was
then it went to maybe 5, and then it went to 3, and then.
Yeah.
And then it was almost every 1.
Yeah. Good for you. Anyone else? This is interesting.
Yeah, with me, I don't think I got up to 5. And it just kept doing.
Yep. What in?
Well, the breathing. I would.
Your breathing stopped?
No, I would. The thought would come into my mind.
Oh, the thought, not the breathing.
And the focus
would shift to the thought.
Yeah.
Just slides over there, doesn't it? You don't even see it go. It's just like, you know, that kid that wants to get out of the house before they have to do their homework, right? Just shoo, gone. Just slides up.
When you think you're on the breath, your mind is already gone.
Yeah. Yeah, thinking that you're doing a really good job. Now, isn't that interesting? Thank you. Because then one of the things that will happen for most people when they see that they're not able to do what they think they're supposed to do is that the judgments start. Oh, I'm doing this wrong. Oh, I'm good. Oh, well, it can't be done anyway. I didn't want to do this anyway. Not true. You did so, but you wanted to succeed. So you see right away, not only the mind goes up, but the emotional reaction. It's slight, but it's there. And that's where, you know, sometimes when you do beginning meditation classes, you get a bunch of people sitting around giving their meditation reports together, and you get some people talking about these very far out wild things that happen to them, you know? Like the Buddha comes down and tells them that, you know, they're the most beloved of their child and takes them off into another galaxy. And, you know? I mean, people do that. People come back with the wildest meditation reports, especially in the beginning of the meditation before they just are able to watch the breath. because for some people, the sense of not being able to do it, they cannot look at it. So instead, they make something even better to look at. Some people, they get busy picking on themselves because they weren't able to do it. Some people just totally lose interest. Well, it's not interesting anyway because my thought patterns are more interesting. But I tell you, every time you allow yourself to bring your mind back to the present moment, you are increasing your power to be who you are. You know, it doesn't matter if you succeed. What matters is that you keep trying to be aware in the present. It doesn't matter whether you do it or don't do it. There are points in meditation and days where it is impossible to focus. The idea is not to focus. The idea is to see yourself. Just with an open, interested heart. Just be here, no matter who you are and what is here. You cannot receive the blessing of this moment unless you're here. Imagine my surprise finding that out. Could this be true? It doesn't matter that you're successful, it matters that you try. That you relax around it and just take it as interesting. I mean, it's very interesting. Like, who's breathing anyway? What do you mean I can't watch my own breath? Now, why do you fall for somebody else's suggestion so quickly? Oh, sure, it's my fault. Oh, yeah. Hey, did I ever tell you about my sisters who are both older than me? They taught me everything I need to know about emotional blackmail, believe me. It was not a lot. But excellent try. Excellent try. Grade three. I'm well trained. My family trained me well. Is this interesting to you?
It's actually, it would be good to show children too.
Oh, children are wonderful meditators. Because you just explain that to them. And they immediately like the challenge. See, they're not afraid of failure because they're children. They're learning how to walk, they're learning how to write paragraphs, they're learning how to ride bicycles. So they know that you fall down and then you've learned something.
I think children do have a real knack of being in the moment.
Yes, they're closer. They're closer to underneath all this, all these reasons why we go off. They're closer to underneath that. It's true. They're closer to home. That's not to say that they're innocent. It's one of my favorite pet peeves that people think children are innocent. They are not. Just as loaded as you and I. They just haven't had as much practice at it. That's all. They do all the same things we do. You just have to practice them.
The age of 0-1?
Yeah, newborns. You've seen more than one newborn, right?
Yes, yes.
And everyone is very different, aren't they? They're not just this washed out baby Jesus meek and mild. Are they?
Nope.
Very definite consciousness in each one. Maybe not skilled in working a body? Absolutely. But when they're like 2 or 3, you can see them trying on emotions, right? Okay, I'm going to cry now and watch. But Mom, I don't want the banana. I really want the chocolate bar. I can't. Yeah, you won't let me have the chocolate bar. And we do.
Did that work?
Oh, well, what about this? I want it. Is that true? That's not innocent, that's trying it out. It's by the time you're your age, you're still doing it, but you found a few that your parents weren't immune to, you understand? That you could move them around a little bit with, that would hit their blind spots, so you're still doing them. And you're doing them to yourself, and you're trapped by them. You're trapped by them because you actually start believing that you are what you like or dislike. You've lost touch with that which can try on many faces and play the entire world. You've lost touch with home. You take yourself so seriously, don't you? There are so many parts of yourself that are just let them speak too. And in order to do that, you have to train your mind to be able to sit still and not jump for every twinge or pain, however great it may be. But just breathe, watch the breath. How does the breath work with this? And wiggle your toes and try to feel your whole body. When that sound went, how many of you found your meditation, your meditation interrupted. How dare they? Don't they know I'm meditating? My meditation. So, did I ever tell you about going to the east to find a good monastery and meditating? Oh, yeah, that's good. So, you go to the east. Monasteries and in this forest monastery, and then they set up the loudspeakers in the trees. They're ruining my meditation. I'm ruining my meditation. Yes.
There's a comment that you made there that you are not who you like or what you like or dislike.
Yeah.
Could you elaborate on that?
Well, I would like you to elaborate on that, you know. I would like you to go into your underneath like and dislike and watch them. And see what they do. See what they do to the breath. just do a little research on that for like a week or something. When you slightly dislike something, do it. And watch what happens if you do what you dislike. If you really like something, don't do it, or do it, and watch what happens. You know, don't just let them rule you, like these thoughts, like this demon. They're the next big demons that come, like and dislike. If you actually manage to bring your mind to just sit here, no matter what thoughts, like there will be thinking, but if your focus actually goes to the thought rather than to the breath, that's when you would say that the count was interfered with. It's pretty impossible to stop thought. There are periods of time when it stops, but there's no need to stop it. So, but when your focus is actually just, you know, just changed horses there, just move from one horse to the other, and you didn't quite notice it, that's when you start at one again. So, but then after you can pretty well hold the mind and just watch the breath from 1 to 10 several times in a row without losing count, then the next thing that will happen is you'll get this horrible pain in your left shoulder. This horrible pain in my left shoulder. Oh my God, I can't stand it. It's gonna kill me. Or an itch just right there. Yeah. And it just gets stronger and stronger, and like and dislike. That's what it is. Your body will start to manifest all these itches and quirks if you don't fall for it. You know, it's very interesting what you can learn by watching like and dislike.
So it's like you're saying in meditation, if it happens, like the pain and the itch. Maybe you're trying to do something, pursue something that you dislike, and it's
yeah. What I'm saying is, try to see how the breath changes with the pain or with dislike of the pain. Keep your focus on the breath. And if the pain is really bringing your attention like mad to that shoulder, there are a couple, say there's a pain in the shoulder, and you're really watching, but it's starting to get really unwholesome. You're starting to get really angry or something, you know? Then you say, okay, I've put down the focus on the breath. You make the statement, I am consciously changing my mind about watching the breath. I'm now going to focus somewhere else. You don't just say, oh, that pain, I've got to get, you know? You make it a conscious decision. I have chosen. Okay, I've put down the focus on the breath, and now I want to just focus on where I feel that pain in my shoulder. Do I feel it, you know, as a stabbing pain, or is it sort of a radiating pain? Is there a pain in my other shoulder? Could I feel it as much from the back or from the front? You explore it a little bit, and then you say, if I put my mind right in the center of that pain, what would it feel like? And then if the pain, it's very likely the first few times the pain will just let go, it will just dissolve, and then you go right back to the breath. And then the pain will come back. And that will happen 3 or 4 times. And if you find that you're actually getting into a lot of unwholesomeness about it, then you say, okay, I put down the practice for a moment, and you allow yourself to move. Stretch, move, shift your focus, turn around a bit, you know, relax a bit, have a drink of water. Then you say, okay, I pick up the practice, and you finish the amount of time that's. But you see, you're doing it not, you know, you're not just blindly reacting. You're saying, okay, I want to see what happens when I push it. I'm not going to push it to the point where I actually feel disturbed. But I want to see what happens if I just do. And I'm also going to check the other shoulder, and I'm going to see what it feels like, you know. First, I'm going to explore the pain, and I'm going to explore what else I feel in the rest of my body. And you'll find that the pain comes and goes. And if you do this, it's only a very short period of time. They shouldn't even take a month at the most. And that's pretty fast for if you think every time you itch, scratch. And that lasts for years. But you can usually, within a month, get to the point where a pain will arise and you'll just say, feeling, and you just allow your whole body to be present, feeling that pain, and you don't lose the focus on it. And the pain is there for a while and then it dissolves. And usually the pain arises, you feel it for a while and then it dissolves, and then suddenly you find yourself crying. Because usually pains in the body are related to emotional states that you were unable to let go of in the past when the experience happened. They are what Elizabeth Kubler-Ross called unfinished business, which the body stores and holds, waiting for a time to finish. You don't need to even know what they are, you just have to sit there. If you sit there and your mind is open and you keep your focus on a neutral place, the unfinished business will come up. If you're willing to hear the body, you're not going to impose your will on it, the body will speak, the unfinished business will finish, and you're still watching the breath. You don't swoon into the grief and say, oh my God, I was so badly treated when my sister took my ice cream. God, how could you do that to me? Or whatever it was. And sometimes they're much worse than that. If you survive, it's because you chose to. Have power. You are the one who is here. You are the survivor. You chose to be here because of love. Trust that. Trust being in the present, watching your breath. Allow the seeds of karma to empty. If you do it this way, keeping your focus, your body will never release more than you're able to work with. Promise you that. I've been through a few. Keep your focus. You start getting scared, say, I put down the practice, get up, go take a cold shower, I'll bring you right back to your old self. How wonderful. Does that answer you? In a kind of roundabout way, but you don't have to be afraid of emotion, you know. All you gotta do is just watch. Is a
in breath more clear than the out breath.
Or maybe it's in breath. Whatever the emotion, joy, sorrow, just we breathe them all. We breathe an incredible dance of energy. You want to know them all. The first stages of meditation are called developing calm. Why? Because you're calm? No, because you learn how to sit in the calm point in the middle of the storm and watch the waves. Because there's nothing you need to forgive. Because you are safe. Because you are safe. Because home is there. Because refuge is. Where do you need to go? My friend Tarjan was telling me about a retreat he was doing at Wangapeka. He was sitting on the edge of the cliff. He's, you know, lifetimes in Dewa Chan, I swear to you. He is sitting there and he is looking out at the wind blowing in the valley of Wangapeka. You've been to Wangapeka. It's a beautiful valley. Watching the wind blowing and the molecules of the air shifting, and they just shift up and they blew through the trees. The trees are also molecules dancing and blowing, and it just blows against his skin, and his skin just becomes molecules dancing and blowing. And there is just consciousness without object, forming here, shaping there, blowing here, shaping there. And then pretty soon it's like galaxies with the winds blowing, and he's just sitting there, you know, like he's not there. You know, it's, you know, just the galaxies blowing. And And he's been able to do that meditation almost as long as I've known him, this guy. Lifetimes of Dewa Chan, as opposed to some of us who've been lifetimes of dogs and cats. Slogging it up from the bottom of the garbage can, so there's a certain content in my voice here. Well, what do you know about suffering? So, you know, realizing who is speaking, I hope you understand this. Well, I had to take acid to do that. You understand that, you know, a certain amount of this is also the reporter. And he said, he came to the end of that meditation and he sat there and he said, so big mind, little mind, what's the difference? And even from the garbage can, I come to that point. Big mind, little mind, what's the difference? Where else are you going to go? Whether you're able to move through galaxies or whether you're able to quibble over big mind, little mind. What's the difference? This is it. This is home. If peacefulness cannot be found here, it cannot be found. Let's start looking. Happy circumstances live in a mansion. Rotten circumstances live on the streets. Still waiting. What is home? That's That's why you want to learn that focus. That's why you want to forgive yourself. Comes up. That's part of what you're doing. When you try to keep your mind in focus, who comes up in response? That's part of what you're doing. That gives you compassion. Every time you fail, you learn compassion. Any other questions you want to ask for this so far?
What's Dewa Chen?
Dewa Chen is God realms, eh? Formless, you just look at somebody. Anybody wants to know about the fast path to Dewa Chen? It's true, you can experience bliss by sitting in meditation and just teaching yourself to focus. Beyond any bliss you can experience in the material world. It's not hard to do. The only thing you really have to do is just hold your mind steady. Don't believe the first demon of just, you know, that first demon of just that dullness that just sort of eases you off into the habitual self. Don't believe that demon. Don't believe the second demon, which has got a much sharper tooth of like and dislike. Don't believe that one either. All you want to do is just see things as they are. So that means whatever arises, whether you see the breath, whether you don't see the breath, that's what is. You just want to see things as they are, with compassionate, non-clinging awareness. That's going to give you the only answer you really want. Which is, the question is, what's happening? It's true, isn't it? This is where Buddhism begins. It says, sit here, be present, observe what occurs. Know for yourself.
The point of the enlightenment for me says, I had a right to be here.
Oh, you're talking about, yeah, basically, yeah, that is the statement, yeah, the unshakable ground. where you just decide, just choose, just to be present. Just to be present. And you choose it again, and again, and again, and again. And all those little actions begin to build. You build something that is unshakable. Because all of those other actions of not being here, or not being able to be here, or not being able to withstand the pain, or all those actions also built something. And so you want to just now sit here and watch all of the results of past activity come up. Love them for what they are, and let them go. And stay present. Don't be a success. Just be. And watch your breath. So watching the breath is not necessary. It's a technique. It is a very good technique. It's especially good for bringing the mind into the present time. There are many ways to bring the mind to focus. Dzogchen practice does, you know, uses the eyes at different levels and opens the mind to look at different things. I mean, those, you know, Zen, you just sit and you just watch mind itself. Sometimes you use a koan. There are many different ways to focus. Watching the breath is simple and straightforward. It's something you don't have to go shopping for. It's right there at the end of your nose. You don't get lost. It's something that you can start to focus on. And quickly enough, if you start focusing on the breath, it will move into different awarenesses. Pretty easy to move into different awarenesses, isn't it? You become aware then of the feeling. Did you become aware of feeling of your face when you were watching the breath? Become aware of heat, or maybe one part of your body starts feeling larger or smaller. That's when the awareness of the breath begins to be awareness of energy flows of your body. That's what that is called, piti, P-I-T-I. Do you have any questions? We're just going to... I don't want to go on too much longer. I just want to give you some ideas about how to look at meditation. And you go and you work with them, and you can talk to, there's a lot of people here that you can talk to, a lot of people. You know, it would be nice if you could meet some place, maybe at each other's homes. If you can't meet in the house, you know, do a wandering meditation class one night a week where, like, different people will host it in the community. You could do that, couldn't you? Where you come together and you're not coming together to talk or anything. You just say, okay, tonight we'll sit here, tonight we'll sit here, tonight we'll sit here. Could you do that as a group? You can do it in the house if the house is empty. You know, you could just say, okay, whoever it is, you just come. And you don't need to talk a lot. You just have a time where you start, a time where you end. And you just come together to sit. I think it would be very helpful for you to just do that on your own. Don't you think so? Is there a night where the house isn't being used that you could do that? Who's on the board? Ah! Monsieur le Président!
We were contemplating Wednesdays.
Wednesday? Do you want to make it Wednesday then? What, at 8 o'clock? Because that gives people with kids a little time. Mm-hmm. Is that good? Say from 8 to 9, and you sit for what? 40 minutes? Down here? Can you do that? So different people can you put a key outside so the people, whoever is first here, can open the door easily, so that you just come in and you just know every Wednesday at 8 o'clock they're sitting here at the house. Is that good? It is of help, isn't it? And the other thing I would like to tell you about sitting, because because usually you've been working all day or whatever. And so you've had like 23 hours of not bringing the mind to one point. And then 1 hour where you're trying to bring the mind to one point. It could be that the in basket is full. You know? So you sit down there at the desk saying, okay, now I'm just going to focus here. Then all the things that have sort of been waiting for you to pay attention to during the day, all the in basket starts to empty, right? And that's very much like what I was saying about the mind will wander. If there's a lot of things you've been busy with, you tend to keep yourself very busy. Mind is going to wander. Don't take that as failure. Just say, oh yeah, in basket is empty. One. Just be patient. Fairly quickly, if you do this kind of meditation, you'll find that you get less stuff in your in basket. After about a week, you'll find that you're processing things quicker during your life. You're not caught with all those things that you start thinking of as soon as you stop. This meditation actually helps you be more focused in your life. This is one of the wonderful things about this meditation. It helps you actually be in your life. A very good practice for that. It helps you not get into those habituated patterns because you don't believe them. You say, oh yeah, there's that old story running again. You just watch the emotion come and go, and you just sit there. You're looking for what is deeper than that. That's a surface reaction, what is deeper. So, but it is also very helpful when you're beginning to sit to remind yourself of what it is you're doing here. To mentally make a break between what you have been doing and what you are doing. So I would recommend that one of the things you do when you come here to sit is you don't talk a lot when you're in this room. You sort of make this room a quieter room so that habitually becomes, you know, the sense of, yeah, now this is where I'm cooling down. The other thing you do is you take refuge. That is to say, you make a mental statement that you are creating this space as refuge. Until you know that it's refuge, you're going to practice refuge. Right? Now, refuge. There are many ways to take refuge as well. For myself, I practice different types of refuge all the time. I like to take texts from different schools and work with them for 2 or 3 years, and then I'll take another one because I have had the great advantage of studying with many teachers and receiving many teachings. And for me, that is an advantage. For some people, they would find it too confusing. So I like to take a lot of different types of refuge and work with them, and I have done in the 30-odd years that I've been meditating. I have done many different forms of refuge, and I can see the value of all of them and what the beauty is of this system or that system. In Zen, the refuge is the form itself of the bowing. There are many ways to take refuge. There is a nice sort of no-name brand, generic refuge, that I would recommend you try. And it goes like this. You're sitting here and you imagine that somebody just turned a light bulb on above your head, about fingertip to elbow above your head. You measure it with your own body. So it's going to fit you. So you just imagine that this beautiful gold light goes on just above your head. Now below your body, it goes through floors. You just do it, don't worry. So shining through from the floor below you, below you, it goes through floors and earth and all that. This beautiful gold light that's hanging. And directly in front of you, this beautiful gold light shining. and behind you. Feel it there behind you. To the right. To the left. And the four quarters, the diagonals. So you're sitting in the middle of 10 beautiful gold lights shining around you. All those lights join you. And now you're sitting in this egg shape, a very beautiful gold light. That's right. Okay. There are other practices that you do that help very much, such as practicing the sense of the hollowness of the body. And that's very useful too, but for beginners, I think the most important is start with refuge. Now when you end the practice, after you watch the breath and count, if you can watch the breath three times through to 10 without losing count, then go to 50. Count it 1 to 50 without losing count. You can do three sets of 10 and then one of 50. Forget counting. You don't need to. You've got a good focus. You find your mind starts wandering and jumping all over the place, pick up the counting again. It's like a tool, it's like a staff you use for rough ground, you know? When you don't need it, you don't need it. When you need it, there it is. You got it. And so then you watch the breath, and then at the end of that, what you do is you think to yourself, as we do at the end of class, that there's this beautiful gold light in your heart, and you think, whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by this practice, I share it with all beings. And if there's somebody particularly you're praying for, you can just think, you could think them in front of you or behind you or something. And just imagine them with the gold light around them, and imagine this light coming, watching them, so that there is less suffering. That's called the sharing of merit. So when you have finished the meditation, whether you think it's good or not, it's not your business. You offer it for the sake of all beings. Then you do a review. So you got that? Refuge, meditation, sharing the merit, and review. Those are the four stages that are the basic essential. You can't do less than that. You need to do all four of those. The review is what I did with you, sort of like, okay, were you able to go from 1 to 10? Was the breath more from the right nostril or the left? Could you feel the in-breath or the out-breath more clearly? And like that kind of stuff. You ask yourself what happened. And there was a period of time when you know how much I like poetry, especially I like to write a really great poem and then run around and read it to everybody. Even on a street corner sometimes. There was a time in my meditation career when the demon became... See, if you don't bite, if you don't go for the demon who drags you off subtly, or the demon who brings you pain, or then your price goes up and the demons start becoming a little less on the demonic side and more on the divine side. They start to have a little nicer look to them, you know, and they start offering you better things. So you be sitting there meditating and you'll suddenly get an insight into something you've always wondered about. And your mind will just go to it, you know? Right? So it's worth hanging on, because like the goodies are at least as good as the baddies. So I used to get these poems. So I'd be sitting there meditating, yes, I don't move when the mind just goes off on the side. Hey, yo, I'm here. Oh yeah, like, dislike, oh yes, my right arm, my right leg just become a towering inferno of pain and it's dying and I'm never going to walk again. Oh well, that's Oh, yeah. The sun shining as it did with it. God. So you want to know, you know, you want to do the review because you don't want to go chasing after that poem when you're meditating. So when you're doing the review, you can also say, and what goodies came? And they'll come back. If you do the review, you will be able, in the beginning, you'll find yourself arguing, oh, I got to remember whether I'm doing the in-breath or the out-breath more because I'm going to need it on the review. I mean, you'll do all kinds of discursive thought, you know. But eventually you'll get bored with it and you'll just watch. And then you come to the end of the practice and you just ask, okay, what happened at the beginning of the practice? What happened in the middle? What happened at the end? And you just leave a little space. Maybe the answer comes in there. Maybe it doesn't, but sometime within the next couple of days, you're going to get the answer. Because you're training your mind to use itself properly. You're training yourself not to worry at everything while it's happening. Allow yourself to have the experience, and then after the experience, ask what happens. And the mind will bring you a result. You're training yourself to use your consciousness, your intelligence properly. Not with worry and agitation and judgment and fear. It's very direct. You were there. Somewhere the memory of what occurred is impressed. Ask the question. Eventually the answer will come. Maybe not when you want it. Gee, that's too bad. Oh my goodness. Shall we kill ourselves? You know, gee, that's too bad. You're not performing the way you would prefer yourself to perform. Gee, that's too bad. But let go of all that pride and all that judgment and all that expectation. Be who you are. That's the only place you're going to find safety. Actually trust yourself to be who you are and see if God, whoever they may be, strikes you dead. Love yourself. Is that good? So, refuge, meditation exercise, share the merit, review, Wednesday night, 8 p.m. It's beautiful gold light in your heart. Just shines through your whole body. Goes down through your arms and legs. Spreads out in all directions, above, below, in front, behind, right, left, four corners, goes through crown and skull bone. Wherever there is suffering due to ignorance of body, speech, or mind, the light just washes it. You think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there's no suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there's no suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings. Thank you for your great compassion. Thank you so much. Okay, you're free to have a Saturday.